You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. I'm your host Kieran Burke and welcome to this very special edition of the show. It's the return of the Rob Pod. That's right, Roddy Collins joining us once again today for an exclusive interview. Of course, I'm sure most of you have listened to the first show with Roddy a few weeks ago. We spoke for well over an hour, I think it was almost an hour and a half, exclusive interview with Roddy, where we ran through his career in full and much, much more. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, maybe give that a listen before you listen to today's show, because there is some bits of overlap here and there. But if not, if you haven't had a chance, then you'll be well able to follow today's show, because we're talking about champagne football with Roddy Collins. I'm sure most of you have read the book at this stage. If you haven't had a chance to pick it up, I'd very much advise you to do so. Please don't download the pirate copies that are going around. Go out there and purchase it. It's only $14.99, I think. A very, very fair price for what you're getting. It's an absolutely fantastic read and great work from Paul Rowan and Mark Tye. They deserve absolutely huge credit. So show them your appreciation by going out there and purchasing the book and not downloading it off WhatsApp or the likes. And I'm sure most of you seen the show on Virgin Media the other night as well. A good recap of the book. So myself and Roddy, we've kept in touch since our first interview, and we've both been reading Champagne Football in or around the same time, and we both obviously watched the show the other night. So we were exchanging text messages about some of our opinions on it, and I said, Roddy, why don't you come on and give us your views on it? So he's been good enough to do that once again. So today we're talking about Champagne Football. Roddy tells us about his dealings with John Delaney in the FAI down the years, how it affected his career, and everything else that has come out since, and Roddy's thoughts on that. He gives us his thoughts on Stephen Kenny as well. Roddy feels that maybe the job was given a little bit too early to King Kenny, but obviously, I'm sure most of you know, if you listen to this show every week, my view would be very, very different. So a good exchange between myself and Roddy there. Make sure you stick around for that, and lots more interesting bits and pieces. Before I bring you the interview, though, we're going to give away a free copy of Champagne Football on today's show. So all you have to do to enter the draw to win a copy of Champagne Football is simply leave a review on our Apple Podcast section. Take a screenshot of that review and post it on our social media channels, let it be our Twitter or our Facebook. And if you don't have Apple Podcasts, that's fine. Just send us a tweet or leave us a message on Facebook, a comment on Facebook saying that you listened to this week's show, and we'll be more than happy to throw you into the draw, and we'll announce the winner on one of our upcoming shows. So that's the prelims pretty much covered. Let's hear from the man himself. It's Roddy Collins. And I'm delighted to say it. Roddy Collins joins us once again on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Roddy, we've kept in contact since your last interview. It was a great success. Listeners absolutely loved it. But we've been exchanging kind of messages the last while over Champagne Football, because we both seem to pick it up in and around the same time. And obviously the programme was on the other night on Virgin Media. So we're going to chat about Champagne Football today on the show. And there's a passage in the book which describes they're described as Delaney loyalists, I suppose. And the passage in the book claims that you were told to keep your mouth shut if you wanted to get work within a month. This was after you had criticised Delaney and the FAI on television. Your response was you'd rather dig holes in the road. Was that the first time you'd encountered that kind of threat in your managerial career?
No, you know what, Kieran, that was an out now. You can perceive it as a threat or as an advice, depending on what way it comes. And it was certainly a threat. You know, the connotations of it was a threat from that situation. But I had it early on in my career in Bowes, and a very close person to me in the club, when I was demanding all the time extra to achieve, came to me and said, look, Rod, you know, you're doing great, top of the league, but, you know, just keep your mouth shut, keep quiet, don't be so demanding, you'll have a job here for 10 years. And like I said to your man, I'd rather dig holes. And I says, yeah, we'll be here for 10 years, we'll never win anything, so we'll have to keep pushing it. But it was, let's just say, Kieran, it was a nice way of saying, tell him to calm down and don't be demanding so much, you know. But it ended up, at the end of the conclusion of Bowes, it certainly was a threat that time, but it depends on who comes with it and who comes with it, the message and what way they present it. But at the time, it was like a friendly chat in the air, but realistically, it was a threat, you know.
Yeah, and in our last interview, you spoke about how perhaps you might have been better off to have stayed quiet during your career, but having watched the programme, having read the book, how are you coping with that dilemma now within your own mind? Do you still feel maybe a hint of regret that your comments maybe they almost rendered you unemployable at times for many years? You mentioned that on the last show, how you'd gone 5 years without a job, or having everything that's come out in the wash now, do you still feel you were right to take the stance you did down the years?
Absolutely, 100%, Kieran. I mean, regrets, as the old saying goes, I have a few with the lorry lot, but that's not one of them. You know, at the end of the day, it's about principle. And I have to stand my ground for what I believe, the way I did in the bowl situation. And if you don't stick to your principles and believe in your principles and be strong with them, so what's the point? You know, what's the point in just participating in something just for the sake of being part of it? You know, I was either doing right or don't do it at all. And I just felt what was going on within the FAI wasn't right. I stuck to my principles. I suffered, as we all know. But you know what? You know, I don't feel now the suffering is gone. It's over. But I feel vindicated, as I said in their first podcast. And I'm happy I stuck to my guns. You know, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about people, close people around me, who I never had to question. So you leave a legacy in your life, and I would always say to my kids, stick to your principles, and wherever comes, comes. But at the end of the day, you'll always sleep well at night. You can put your head in the pillow. And I also spoke to someone 2 weeks ago who didn't stick to his principles. And I asked him many years ago, why did he concede and go in and work with the FAI? And he said, oh, I tried to fight them for so long. He says, I was getting no work, and I realised I had to join them. But this man is not there anymore and regrets it. So I'd rather have regrets of my nature than regrets of his nature, because he's a lot of years to live, you know, after reading the book of Seymour Conelta. He made the wrong choice.
Yeah, very, very fair points. Look, Mark Tighe and Paul Rowan deserve absolutely huge amounts of credit for their investigative work. And it does beg the question, though, why other media sources, why other journalists out there over 15 years didn't dig deeper? Because League of Ireland fans had this campaign against Delaney for almost a decade. As long as I've been following the league, there's always been a huge disconnect between the FAI and League of Ireland fans. League of Ireland fans were almost brushed aside and laughed at by some people in the media and within certain groups of Ireland fans. Look, that's probably because they were getting their tickets, they were happy out with their jolly ups away, whereas people that were following the game week in, week out, they could see there was issues there, but nobody was digging deeper. Do you think that there's some people within the media maybe that have questions to answer that they didn't push harder over those 15 years?
Yeah, I understand that situation, and the question has a couple of facets to it. Like, the media takes in the print media, the audio, and then it takes individual, like the televisions. And at the end of the day, you know, a lot of these outlets were compromised, as in, you know, associations like television companies. Now, they were compromised because they were all vying for television rights for games. The print media were looking for to fill their pages with snippets and scoops on different situations. And then you had the radio, who were in the same situation. They were all afraid. There was fear there, there was a compromise there, and there was also favour there. So there was lots of answers to that question. But asking me, were there companies, media companies, who could have told their employees? You see, if you're working for a media outlet, you have to, you're answerable to people. For argument's sake, if I'd done something, it went through solicitors before it came out. I've wanted to say a lot more, by the way. There had to be, you know, put by solicitors and then a lot taken out. I'm sure the book with Paul Rowan and Mark Tighe had to go through legal implications before they could print. I said it's a lot more they could have printed. But to answer your question, yeah, I felt the media, they do what do we call the Faustine bargain? They signed up to a situation where they had to let their principles go, their morals, and they had to just do what they had to do to get the coverage on what was important to the public and the stuff that was going on behind. Look, Kieran, I've been around the media long enough. I've been in enough media chats behind the scenes, green rooms, pre-programmed situations. Everybody knew what was going on. Don't let anyone fool you. Everyone knew what was going on. But because of the machine that the FAI had legally, they were all terrified to take them on. And that was a situation that I thought could have been eliminated. If the All had shown principle and proper backbone, I would call it, and say, right, enough is enough. We'll all stick together and put a blanket ban on the FAI until disclosures come out, and you know we will expose this corrupt situation. But it is what it is. It's life. It's the world. People are in different situations for different reasons. Some are financial. Some are just psychopaths, as they call it. They will do anything to be in around the situation. And then you've got the ones that were the enablers who were benefiting from it financially, whether it's tickets, whether it's trips, whether it's parties, you name it. Very, very strong personalities in the media opted, in my opinion, to go with the first-name bargain. And they've delivered it at the end of the day. We all know who they are. They know who they are. Maybe they don't care. They were part of the problem, a major part of the problem. And some of them are the worst thing that ever happened to Irish football. Getting back to the situation with the league of Ireland, nobody really cared about them. Nobody cared about them except the people, the volunteers, the supporters who paid. Anyone that got money out of the FAI and the league, in my opinion, haven't got a leg to stand on when they stand up and condemn the situation now. They're hypocrites, in my opinion. As regards people in the media, you know, professing their divine, their undivine, or what would you call it, their divine love, let's just say, if I have that right, for Irish football, that's a charade. They were people that were getting paid, and people who knew what was going on. They make me sick, I'll be honest with you. I won't name them because you know who they are, and everyone knows who they are, because I've been approached by many people, and these people's names come up and said, are they stupid, or did they know? They all knew. Everyone knew what was going on. But did they care? No. Because their pockets were getting lined. They were getting work from the media. They were getting work out of League of Ireland football. You know, I've heard managers, I've heard people say, I love this league. Of course you do. You're getting 800 quid a week, a grand a week, or whatever. Players, this is a great league, I love it. You're getting paid. Ask the ones that were put out of the league, the ones that were stopped from working, who got no money out of it. Ask them what they think of it, and they give you the real answers. So, you know, there's a few answers to that question, Kieran, but that's my take on that one. The media let themselves down, in my opinion. Thankfully, I was involved with a media outlet who didn't let the league down, who didn't let people down, and stood up to it. However, there were still people in the same organisation who I feel let the media down. And let the league and Irish football down.
There's an entire chapter, really, in the book about how Delaney built up an almost cult-like status among the grassroots level. Of course, one club famously named their pitch after John Delaney, while famously we had Waterford and Limerick, their chairman both coming out with statements of support as the walls began to crumble around the FAI. Should those who supported Delaney be examined with greater scrutiny, or do you feel that perhaps they were just taken in by the charade and maybe we should have a touch of sympathy for them?
Well, some of them were taken in for sure, because I've been around the country and I've met nice, very nice people, genuine people who were trying to raise money to build, you know, little pitches for five sides for the community. They were taken in, of course they were. They were never going, like, these would be in stronghold Gaelic areas where they were never going to even raise money in fundraisers to achieve what they wanted. So I reckon there was an opening there that was identified and went in and got them all on board. Of course, they all got all their votes. Gave them peanuts, gave them, you know, days out in the Viva Stadium, gave them tickets, gave them shirts, or ball boy situation for the kids, you know. But that's like, I don't, at the end of the day, dictators, and the FAI was a dictatorship in my opinion, dictators are very, very cunning people, you know. Very cunning people. They would be very cute narcissists, in my opinion. And they would manipulate these other people who would be delighted to just have them around. It's in football. It's obviously in life, but in football, I've experienced it many times as a manager. You go to a club, suddenly you have a cohort of people wanting to get you to a restaurant, want to get you to a golf. Oh, great, I want to be part of the big thing. You know, the league arses a lot of them, but a lot of them are just psychopaths, you know, they just want to be part of it. And that's what I see in the overall picture of the support that was given to the leadership there, where people, like you must remember, the leader was power hungry, very vain, very, very vain narcissist, you know, who he just craved attention. And these people were giving him attention, whether supporters getting a few cans, whether it was little clubs around the country getting a couple of grand towards kit or whatever, that fed the ego of the leader of the organisation. So it worked both ways in that one. You know, at the end of the day, there was a situation there that was exploited by a very, very, very clever narcissist who, he exploited these poor people, in my opinion. So for some of them it was a charade, for others it was a financial game and a place on, you know, an association where they would benefit from it, whether it's trips or tickets or prestige or a title. So it was made up of a lot of different people who should be, in my opinion, a lot, but absolutely should be deeper into their association with what went on, 100%. And then the other poor unfortunates who were, as you say, caught up in the charade, but got a few quid and got their picture in the paper with their little clubs, and I don't begrudge them that. There's a lot of very good people out there. As you said, there was benefactors out there, or people that benefited from the FBI's situation. There was people that were given their life to it. So there's a combination of people there that were in that situation. But yeah, you're right. Definitely. There are people there still to give some answers.
Yeah, and having read the book in full, for me, just a personal opinion on what I took from the book, the only people for me that came out with the book worse than John Delaney were the board members who stood by and allowed this to happen. And there was almost a rush after every board meeting to heap praise on John Delaney, to be the first one to give him praise and tell him what a good job he was doing. There seemed to be a sense of sympathy for the likes of Eddie Murray. A lot of people, from reading the book, they felt like he was hung out to dry. While for me, I personally thought Donal Conway, it was unbelievable that he remained within the association. He seemed to have a very close association with John Delaney for many years. Now maybe he didn't agree with everything that went on, maybe he didn't agree with anything that went on, but still he was there, he was part of the board that allowed this to unfold. What are your thoughts on the board members who stood by and allowed all of this to happen over 15 years or so?
Stupid people, very naive people, or they were cute enough to let things happen. So they look, at the end of the day, Kieran, they have to look in the mirror every day. Irish football has been destroyed and will be destroyed in the next 10 years. Absolutely. They were part of it. They went out there, they sat on all the big dues, you know, they were part of the association. So they're part of it. And in my opinion, they're all responsible. Sympathy I have for none of them. The only ones I had sympathy for were Paddy McCall and Brendan Dillon. They're the ones that catch my attention, because like some other people, they stood up to the situation and just realised this is off the wall stuff, and it's not right and it's not morally right. And they stood their ground and, you know, they suffered. So they're the only ones that get sympathy for me. The rest of them, no, absolutely not.
And looking towards the future, I suppose the concluding chapter of the book makes a very fair point that Delaney's supporters, they'll point to the fact, you know, the Aviva Stadium, the FAI had a share, they'll point to his rise within UEFA and other bits. But there's a point made that the League of Ireland's ranking within coefficient was actually lower when Delaney left power than when he came to power. Likewise, the national team as well went from an almost record high to a very, very low ranking. Is there perhaps time for the next person that goes in there to be assessed totally differently on an ongoing basis, on measurable goals such as rankings, finances and the like, as opposed to how much support they have or haven't got?
Well, any company has a CEO. The CEO is scrutinised on an annual basis. It's all, you know, results-based in any job. But unfortunately, the FBI was run by the CEO at the time, so he wasn't answerable to anyone. So I would be shocked if that wasn't the case in the new, well, I wouldn't say the new FBI, it's not new. There's still a huge amount of tentacles still in there. I mean, the cancer has been removed, but there's still a lot of tentacles in there that, in my opinion, need to be cleaned out as quick as possible. But getting back to your question, no, you're talking about the FIFA Stadium. That was the worst thing. Delaney was the worst thing for that, because that enabled him the ability to access money through banks, through... He had an asset there, he believed, where he could go and remortgage stuff on the back of it and build up worse debts than what we already had. I mean, the Aviva Stadium, in name, were tenants there. But in reality, we are absolutely up to our neck in the Aviva Stadium. I mean, when we will ever be cleared of that mortgage, God knows the way things are going. So, as regards the Delaney's association with that, everybody should keep their mouth shut and down. As regards walking away up the ladder in UEFA, let's just sit back for a minute and look at that. UEFA and FIFA, pardon me, have been riddled with corruption scandals. So for anyone to be able to claw their way up that viper's nest in that situation, it's not a great recommendation for the character that they are. Because in my opinion, whoever's in there getting to the top, wow. What a character they must be. So we won't have any praise on the two parts of that question as regards the Aviva and as regards the thing. Getting back to the coefficiency, we all know Delaney's disdain for League of Ireland football. That was my argument with him. When I seen him the first time trying to present me to foreign representatives of FIFA or wherever, UEFA, wherever they were, and an RTE duo in the Mansion House. That's when I turned and looked and I went. He was half cut at the time and I thought, my God, and I said to my wife, Karen, I said, that's what's running Irish football. We are fucked. And I didn't get that wrong. And that was maybe 14 years ago. So, no, he has no credibility. There is nobody out there in the right mind. I mean, I read an article in the paper, Pat Dolan said, don't kick a man when he's down. Well, I don't know where Pat's coming from, you know. I don't know what the relationship there with him and Pat is. But I think Pat regret making that statement, because there was no other man, in my opinion, you know, would ever come out with a statement like that under the circumstances. So it's a funny old world, but no credibility there but for that man at all. Viva Stadium, financially in tatters, Irish football, from the international down, by the way, financially in tatters and physically in tatters. League of Ireland, he left that in a terrible state, a problem child. So no absolute argument on that one. No credibility there at all. He's destroyed a lot.
Yeah, and you've touched on it already, I suppose, the aftermath of the John Delaney reign. Look, it was always going to be a massive mess for whoever stepped in there next. But what have you made of Gary Owen's performance and the people he brought in, such as Niall Quinn? Obviously, Niall Quinn no longer involved with the association, but Gary Owen did bring him in at the time. So what have you made of the new FAI, as they're calling it?
Well, there's no new FAI. Not yet. Because, as I said to you earlier in the interview, Delaney was the cancer. He's gone. But like everything else, there's a lot of after treatment to be done. And I thought when Niall went in there, and people question my relationship with Niall Quinn. I only met Niall a couple of times. He helped me when I was manager at Carlisle. I met him once in a restaurant. I met him once in town and had brief conversations. But the short period I was in his company, I liked him. I liked him. I thought he was, you know, he was for the right reasons, wanting to get involved when he did come in. As regards Owen, coming in, I thought that was a great partnership, and then Barnett coming in as well. But then I realised after a short period of time they were fighting a losing battle 100%, because the tentacles of Delaney are still in there. Mark my word, they are embedded in there, and it's going to take a lot more than what Niall Quinn and Gary Owen's trying to do to get them out. So, you know, the problem is not gone. The problem is certainly not gone. It's just gone away a little bit. The lads come in, they got it over the line, the financial situation. I'm sure if I was Niall Quinn, I would be relieved to run 100 miles away from the situation. Gary Owen likewise is going to step down. and the resistance they got when they went in, and then this paper or whatever it was talk about Barnett being brought in to by the banks to look after the finances of the bank. Great, brilliant. That's brilliant, because if that's the reason he's there, happy days. At least he's not going in to look after his own bank balance. He's going in to look after the bank. He was going to, at the end of the day, yep, you're in a brand name with nothing. They have nothing. And when I say a brand name, that's shot as well. But they have nothing. No credibility, no money. All they have is mortgages. Mortgages, a huge amount of employees who are going to suffer as well. So the whole fallacy that came out from Meridian Square into Abbottstown was a fallacy. We went from so many employees to over 200 that we couldn't afford. We're involved in a stadium. We are up to our neck in. The league, Indigenous League, is falling apart. And the international team are up to the eyes in debt with paying off managers. And on the pitch, we're struggling as well. So, you know, there's no argument. It's just an absolute shambles. I had hope when Niall Quinn walked in and the man owns, and with Barnett being there as well. Lovely. We have reputable people there now. With Larry Bass, who's in there as well, who I know a small bit, but I would trust with my life, and a good football person. They're the people you want in there. And suddenly two are gone, or one gone and one ready to go. And you think, well, who's left? They're bringing the lad in from England to become CEO. Well, best of luck to that chap. He better sleep with one eye open. I can tell you that, with what's left in that organisation, because it's not gone away, you know.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you this later on, but you've brought the point up there, so I'll ask you now just about the brand name of the FAI. Should a rebrand of the FAI have been considered? Has the brand name gone beyond toxic, or can it be saved? FIFA, a lot of people felt, was beyond saving a couple of years ago, but they seem to have turned the ship around, and the name FIFA is quite strong again. What about the FAI? Can it be saved, or should it have been rebranded?
Well, you see, FIFA is a different situation. It's a multi-billion pound industry, FIFA is. And there was one bad apple. There was probably many bad apples there, as we'd probably find out. But the leader of the pack was Blatter. And he thought he was bigger than FIFA. But obviously, that's never going to happen. Money dictates. At the end of the day, money dictates. If we had billions in the bank, the FAI brand name would survive. But in order to rebuild a brand name, you need investors. You need sponsors. And you need credibility. The FAI is shot. The FAI has been shot for years, by the way. It's been shot for years. It did get a little resurrection early on in Delaney's tenure when we thought, oh yeah, he's straight, he's doing things right. But obviously that was another, you know, fallacy, as they say. So the brand name is shot, absolutely. And I listened to, I think it was Niall Quinn, don't quote me on this one, that it was a company brought in to rebrand or to look at rebranding. And they said if it was the list of 100, we'd be bottom. And if it was a list of 200, we'd be bottom. So if professors are telling you that, it has to go. But what are we going to call it? We can't call it the new FAI, because it's not the new FAI. It's 90% the old FAI. So what will we call it? The 90% FAI new brand? It needs to be cleaned out, trust me. And it's not going to happen in my lifetime. Well, not in my lifetime. I'm going to live a bit longer than that, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. There's too many people in there that were on the gravy train when it went bust, and they're still there, and they're only sitting in the high grass waiting for someone who's like-minded to the previous CEO, and they'll all be back out. I'll be back out wearing their suits, wearing their toys, you know yourself, as the song goes. So don't hold your breath on a new brand.
Yeah, and look, you've already kind of touched on it, the fact that maybe certain elements in the media let themselves down over the years. Some of the grassroots obviously were taken in as well by little token gifts, so it's probably redundant to ask you about politicians, but it's just funny. I was on my phone this morning and a video popped up on my timeline from a couple of years ago. It was the famous Michael Healy-Ray incident, where he was praising John Delaney during that shambolic Doroctus hearing. Do politicians have a big question to answer and how they let things go as well? Because this is an organisation, you have to remember, the FAI, that's in receipt of huge amounts of state funding. So is it difficult, though, for the FAI or for the government at the same time to get overly involved, because they have that threat of FIFA, you know, they don't want political interference. They famously got that letter as well. There was a chapter on that in the book about a letter coming from, I think it was UEFA, reminding the Irish government that they cannot get involved politically. But at the same time, surely they have to hold the FAI to a certain account and a certain standard.
Well, Kieran, just the first part of that question, Michael Healy, right? I think he's hilarious. He lives, I mean, to say Cork is the Republic, Michael Healy, right, has his own little, he's counting down his own little bubble in Kerry. And it's you know, it's typical of what is parish pump politics. We all look after our own corner. Like we earlier in the interview about people down in different regions getting money for a pitch and they took it. That's the way it is. It's Irish mentality. So Michael Healy, Ray, I get great entertainment, but I take him very lightly with a grain of salt. So whatever he says, you know, he'd say something different tomorrow, leave him to it. If it benefits his constituents, it doesn't matter if Saddam Hussein walked in and put a pitch up, he'd be more than welcome as well. So we leave that as that is. Getting back to the other situation, that's a bigger picture here. Governments subsidise it through the Sports Council or whatever, right? And grants. And they should have a closer rein on it. However, like FIFA, you see, FIFA is such a powerful body. It doesn't want to interfere. In actual fact, it's an organisation similar to Scientology. It has its own rules, has its own leadership, and it's not part of the real world. They have their own kangaroo courts, as I call them, at different levels. And the reason why they don't want governments involved is because the secrecy is covering up for a lot of corruption. Now, you see, you have to look at the political point of view as well. And no doubt, because I spoke to politicians, I had politicians come to Abbottstown with me as witnesses and character witnesses to take on the FAI. And in our conversations with lots of politicians, they would be absolutely livid at what was going on. But their hands were tied because of the bigger picture. You see, politicians can't go in, interfere, suddenly FIFA take the Irish Football Association out of the World Cup or whatever, suspend them. Suddenly there's a huge backlash from, 400,000, maybe million people. Politics is politics. The way it is in government, the way it is in football, the way it is in all environments. So I do sympathise with the government a bit on that one. However, I think there has to be a balance struck somewhere. We're all governments. But then again, we look at governments getting World Cups in countries that are part of the corruption with FIFA. We've seen that. That's public knowledge. So it's a tricky one, a very tricky one. They've done their best. They brought them in too. I think actually the time Delaney went in and pled the Fifth Amendment was his downfall, because that was the time when the public seen him for what he was. He was having a laugh, putting his two fingers up to everyone, even the grassroots. So they've done their bit. I thought Ross fumbled a good bit and a bit all over the shop, but he stood his ground in certain situations. I was just raging that they conceded on the situation where they allowed the members of the FAI to remain another 2 years or whatever it is, 12 months, 2 years. I thought that was a huge concession.
Yeah.
That shouldn't have been allowed. And it enables them to stick in there and to bring like-minded people in to replace them. So I thought that was a huge concession on that one. But as I say, governments worldwide, look, there's corruption everywhere. The Irish government, I felt they'd done their best, particularly Sinn Féin. I thought the Gael Munster really called them out and done their best. And, you know, you can only do a certain amount, as you say, it's politics. But they did expose them at the Oireachtas meeting, and that was a huge, huge day. That showed how conceited that Delaney was to think he could sit there and talk back to the people. He wasn't talking to the people in the Oireachtas. He was talking to every kid's father that drives into a game, every kid's father or mother who stands on the line, who subscribes money to clubs to have their kids play the association football. That was the day he cut his own throat, and that was coming. But so we can pick holes in the government, and we always can, However, I think on this particular situation, Imelda Munster, I think her name is, particularly her, she was the one that done it for me.
Yeah, a loud woman, and she did a great job, is right. What did you make of Delaney's final act in appointing Mick McCarthy, but having a replacement already lined up in Stephen Kenny, regardless of how well or how poorly McCarthy was going to perform? McCarthy could have won the European Championships, and it seems Stephen Kenny was going to take the reins anyway, although there was a line in the book where it seemed Delaney obviously thought he'd still be in control of the FEI, and he said, well, the goal then would be to try and push Kenny back. So there's a lot of tangled webs there, but take that away and just look at the deal in itself. Mick McCarthy, 2 years, and then to be replaced by Stephen Kenny. What did you make of the makeup of that deal? Was it a bad idea? And obviously it's turned out to be a bad idea because of the way the COVID situation unfolded and Stephen Kenny taking over for the playoff game where he shouldn't have been taken over until the next campaign. So look, there was nothing that could be helped about that, but overall, in the light of day, what did you make of the deal itself?
Well, that was the actions of a deluded man. As Yael was saying, it was the sting of a dying wasp. The game was up for him. Every turn was, every League of Ireland ground, people had turned. They were demonstrating, it was coming out in the background of TV, it was golf or tennis balls on the pitch. He knew the game was up. And like, through all his tenure there, he tried to pull one last rabbit out of the hat. And at the time it happened, football people, real football people who cared, were astonished. The ones that were sauntering along, going to his parties, getting tickets for games off him, they just played the game. They should have exposed that immediately. They didn't. But when you read the book, if I'm not mistaken, I think Johnny Giles had an input in the Stephen Kenny employment situation. Am I correct on that one?
I read that as well. Yeah, it seemed that way.
Yeah. So you know, there's a media connection there that should have exposed the situation. To have two managers at the same time was absolutely off the wall. I disagreed with Stephen Kenny getting the job so soon, and I still do. Can he become a great manager? I believe he could. Yeah, 100%. But I just thought it was wrong. It was just a token to try and appease everybody. We'll appease the League of Ireland. We'll appease the Mick McCarthy supporters who were there before. You know, it was just like the woman he brought Steve Staunton in. Poor old Steve wasn't ready for it, but no one's going to turn the job down. He used him. So it was just another one of his tricks that was deluded at the time. And now we're suffering the consequence for that. Because at the end of the day, Mick McCarthy, I believe, 100% would have got us over the line in Slovakia. I have absolutely no doubt about that. People can talk about style of football. Results is all that matters at this particular point. We're down 7 million already, plus what we would have had the benefits of representing our country in our own city. Unbelievable, stupid, ridiculous thing that was enabled by media people. They have so much to answer for, trust me. I will call them out eventually, but they have so much to answer for, because I read in one article that Stephen Kenny's the best thing ever happened to Irish football. Well, the jury's out on that one. But the author of that, to me, is probably the worst thing ever happened to Irish football, because there's a media connotation there that's really, I don't care. I don't think they care about Irish football. I really don't think they care. I think they're selfish. They're no different than the people that was running the football into the ground. They have the power of the pen, they have the power of the TV and the power of the airwaves. And for their own gratification, or maybe looking after other people's interests, they really don't care. And that will come out in the wash when everything pans out at the end of the day. There are other people that should be exposed and will be exposed. Mm. And I'm looking forward to that day, because I've worked in the media and I've been eliminated by the media. And that's their prerogative. I've no problem with that. I owe nothing to nobody. They owe me nothing. However, I've worked with people in the media who have been huge enablers of what's going on and what has gone on, and it's still enabling what's going on because they have a self-interest in it. For me, that has to stop. And they have to be called out. And as soon as they're called out, and everyone's on the same hymn sheet, football people, grassroots, volunteers, Aircom League, international supporters, media, everybody that really, really cares about Irish football, get on the same hymn sheet. We're never going to achieve nothing. Never. I mean, we look at Finland the other night, Karen. Twice they beat us. They have a population of, same as us, just over 5 million. They don't have as many players playing the Premier League in England. So, the association, the people of Finland, everything is all in unison to get success. We're not. We have an industry absolutely infested with vipers who are all taken. Remember one thing. Football industry is the biggest abuse of finance on the planet. It's a huge, huge cash cow. You don't have to be educated to be a millionaire in football. You can leave school at 14, become a footballer at 16, go on and become a coach, become an administrator, become member of board of management, all the time creeping up the ladder to make money and line your pockets. And the game is infested with them. I've met them time and time again. And there's so many good people who turned their back because of that. It's frightening because the good people were prepared to take the sacrifices, take the knocks for the actual love of the game. They don't just say it and write it and pretend it and shed tears on cameras. We love football. We love our bank balance. That's what they're saying. We love being recognised in the street. We are absolutely delighted because our egos are being fulfilled. Real football people are the ones cutting grass, putting up nets in small clubs, working for nothing. Managers who go into clubs and take what the club can offer, not a penny more, and give back everything they can give back. They're real people in football and real managers. And until everybody is on the same hymn sheet, forget about qualifying for the World Cup. We have no chance of qualifying for the World Cup. We'll kick this down the road and we'll have our so-called football pundits and analysts, or whatever you want to call them, spinning the yarn because it suits them and their friends who have been party to some of this goings on. Till they're gone, forget about it. And you know what? I'll probably lose media work again. But I look in the mirror, Kieran, put my head in my pillow, and when I'm gone, hopefully I'll leave a legacy of principles to a game that I genuinely love and improved my love for the game from my stance, my principles and my employment and everything I've done, never for financial gain, ever.
Yeah, and I had wanted to ask you actually about your thoughts on Stephen Kenny's reign so far, but I think you've probably given your feelings there. You don't feel that he's ready for the job. Obviously, given what he's done at Longford and Dundalk, I'm obviously going to naturally disagree with you. I'm a huge believer that Stephen Kenny will do an amazing job with Ireland, but we might skip over that one because you've already given your feelings.
No, I want to answer that because people think I'm an anti-Stephen Kenny. Far from it. 1,000,000% far from it. Stephen Kenny, given time, will 100% do a job. Stephen Kenny wasn't ready for the job, and I said it many, many times. Look to the finished manager, 6 years in the 21s. Stephen Kenny should have been left there for 4 years at least. Right? He should have been brought in when the association wasn't in turmoil. He should have been brought in when the ones he's worked with at under 21 level had progressed into a system. Let's remember one thing. Nobody's revolutionised Irish football now at the moment. I'm listening to all the bullshit in the papers. Oh, we play great football. They're only playing the football they play every day in England and the clubs they play with. That's the new style now. You know, it's not the Irish way anymore. We will play like Finland. We will play like Denmark. We will play like everyone. They all play the same way. Is that going to work for us? I don't think so. But look, at the end of the day, Stephen is not ready for the job, in my opinion. the players coming through will need maybe 2 to 3 years to establish them as senior players in the Premier League and then senior international players. We won't qualify for the World Cup, there's no doubts in that one. What I will say now is, if the Abbey are so adamant, and all the people in the public are so adamant, and you are as well, I respect that, sit down now, before the World Cup starts, and give Stephen an 8-year contract. Do that now. That's what I want to see happen. If not, you're going to lose probably one of the best managers we could possibly ever have for the national team. Because if we lose 5 more games, he's gone.
Yeah, I think you make very...
to be a clamour. Remember one thing, we've played 5 games, we scored 1 goal in the corner. 5 games before that, we scored probably 1 goal in the corner. Nothing's changed. Suddenly we're revolutionising football. This is what we're being told. But the results have stayed the same. There's different ways of mentality. Go back to boxing, a Mexican boxer, okay, before you go into a ring, you know you're going to be in a major scrap. Before any technical ability, whatever you have, you're going into a scrap. So you're 10% down straight away. We're going into the same mantra as all the European clubs that have been doing it for 30, 40 years. We're suddenly going to change in the space of 12 months and become as good as Denmark. We don't have the players. We're playing a system of football. We don't have the players to play. And I'm sorry about that. They all play at different levels in England because they're all coached to do it that way. I'm into a team. So you're after a team that we all believe be good enough to play in the Premier League, probably fight for relegation on the table, to take on international teams and succeed. It's not going to happen. And that's Helen Stephen, who's a micromanager, by the way, as we've read in the paper, who micromanages. But management's not about micromanaging. Management's about thinking on your feet. Management is about having to flip in seconds, like Mourinho would have to do. 15 minutes into a game, make a change. There's different types of managers. So if you actually analyse it, and we talk about stats and possession, I mean, probably our defenders had more possession of the ball in the games we've played than our front three or midfield. So what does that tell you? Possession for the sake of it in the wrong areas. Any of the chances we got by the cross from Stevens and Shane Long, who's not a prolific goal scorer, didn't put away. Most of the other chances were just making up these bits and pieces, as they say. They weren't constructive moves where we know from a training pitch, when he goes wide, he's going to go Davis, we're going to go to far post, blah, 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 blah. He's going to cut midfield, balls in the back of the net, thumbs up, we've done that together. We're not going to do that. It's not going to happen. So, for everyone out there, I don't want to burst a bubble. I don't want to be a naysayer. I do believe in Stephen because you have to. I think he achieved that Dundalk. He won one league at Bowes, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you actually look at it, Stephen's success over 20 years as a manager or more has been solely at Dundalk. You know? So don't get me wrong. He's not ready for the job. Full stop. Would he be ready after 6 years, 4 years with the 21s? Possibly, I believe, yeah. Because you would get to know the style of play that he wants to instill. Any manager, any coach now that's been brought in the last 6, 7, 10 years will walk in and play the same football. Is it the Irish way? No. Can we mix it? Yes, 1,000,000%. We can play both ways. We can play Stephen Kenny way and we can play McCarthy way, if that's the way you want to call it. Because at the end of the day, the only time we looked like scoring in the games was something in around the box. We weren't putting enough crosses in the box. People are slaughtering McCarthy lately. You know, I said put crosses in the box. That's what you got to do. We don't have the players. We don't have an Ericsson. As much as England don't have one, they might have your man Grealish that we should have had, who can thread passes when the team is sitting deep. We don't have that. We need to be putting the ball in the box physically. And when we play Slovakia, by the way, Alex Ferguson, top managers, Pep Guardiola and Mourinho. When it was getting tight with minutes to go, they threw a centre-half up and launched balls into the box. What's not, is there a bit of snobbery going on here? That's just my opinion. I've done it, I've achieved doing it, and you know, football's not an exact science, and no one's going to change the world of football. No coaching manual is going to change the world of football. You look up the Leeds manager, who's looked up to by
Guardiola.
What's his name? Pep Guardiola, supposedly the best in the world. You look at him. Will he throw centre-half up 1,000,000%? Of course he will, because there's no snobbery there. It's about results. But look, I say every manager needs 10 games regardless. Stevens had five. Five more coming up. You can use the COVID, which I don't agree with. You can say, oh, well, Connolly would have made a huge difference against Slovakia. He made no difference against Finland. In my opinion, one shot from distance and one that he possibly, you know, his decision making around the box is naive and immature. But that will improve. That's why I said give Steven 4 years. So I said, when you go in, you've a Connolly who's probably bagging maybe a goal every three games. And then the other excuse for coming up with it just absolutely boils my blood. We don't have a Robbie Keane. So what? There's more room to score a goal. There's many ways to manufacture a goal. And Stephen has to look at that. And if you were saying don't launch the ball in the box, don't put cross in, you're not going to get corners, you're not going to get penalties, you're not going to get free kicks on the edge of the box in threatening areas. What we're good at, let's get real. So leave the snobbery to one side. You know, we will change as a nation eventually with our style of play, but you can't just switch it off. Aggression, quick football, long passes at times, it's all part of football. There's no exact science. So that's my opinion on the last question.
Very fair points. And Roddy, the book ends with a fairly explosive quote. Paul Rowan, he makes contact with Joe Delaney looking for a quote on the book, and he's told that the journalists are nothing but yellow bellies or something along those lines, but basically the word scumbag was used. I thought it was a fairly explosive way to round off the book. What was your reaction to that?
Well, you know what, when I read that quote, it flashed a light in my head. I said, that's the environment that John Delaney grew up in. And I thought to myself, you know, after reading the book and reading some of the comments, especially Oliver Callan wrote that he addressed his wife as a C-U-N-T. You know, any man, well, don't call him a man, but any human being, to call the mother of his children that word in public, to me, is far lower than the accusations his father made about the media. It's absolutely deplorable. But it just paints a picture of the whole family environment there. And you know what? It's sad. Leave them all off to wallow in their own self-pity, and we'll pick up the pieces behind it for Irish football.
Final question today, Roddy. What's next for yourself?
Next for myself is I'm going to work on your podcast once a month if you have me.
the pay mightn't be great.
In January, February, and just to be happy, get through this COVID situation, and I'm upskilling myself in the football coaching end of it, and I'm ready to go again.
Brilliant stuff. Roddy, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you again today. Thanks for taking the time out to talk to us, and look, we'll be in touch again.
Well, man, thanks, Kieran. I really enjoyed being on your show, and I look forward to another time.
And that, folks, was Roddy Collins. Once again, a huge thanks to Roddy for taking time out to speak to us on today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, we'd really appreciate your feedback. There was great feedback on our social channels after our last interview with Roddy. I absolutely loved seeing all the messages coming in saying that you all listened and you all had different opinions on it. Look, whether you love the man, whether you didn't like him as a manager, whatever it may be, if you've taken time out to listen to the interview and you had a feeling one way or another on it, we'd love to hear from you on our social channels. We're on Twitter, at Between Stripes is our handle, and search Between the Stripes on Facebook or on Instagram and you'll find us there, and we'd absolutely love to hear from you. Again, if you're enjoying the show, if you're a weekly listener, please do hit that subscribe button and you'll get the latest shows straight to your device as soon as they come out. And of course, we'll be back again next week with our usual show. We'll be chatting about all the latest goings on in the League of Ireland. Of course, there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment. This has been recorded before Longford Town's game against Cove, but a lot of us are wondering whether that maybe might be the last game of the season, because there's a lot of talk about level 5 restrictions and whatnot at the moment. So it's a worrying time for everyone out there at the moment, so do please keep safe and keep following those regulations, and hopefully we'll have plenty more football to look forward to this season in the League of Ireland. So yeah, we're back again next week, more big name interviews to come and all the rest. Until then, thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon.